Hi, I'm Rick Reynolds, and you're listening to Affair Recovery Radio, radio to the power of God. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, sponsors, or advertisers of this station. Due to the sensitive nature of the topics discussed on this program, it is not suitable for children, so we strongly advise that children not be within listening range of this program. Also, please be advised that while we are counselors, what we're doing here tonight is not counseling, and if you have a need, we strongly advise that you seek professional help. The Affair Recovery Center is a community of counseling professionals and couples who have experienced the abundant blessing of reconciliation and renewal. We are dedicated to the restoration of marriages crippled by infidelity. Our mission is to offer hope, support, and recovery for couples and individuals who have suffered the pain as a result of infidelity, betrayal, or sexual addiction. We truly believe there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal. Hi, welcome to Affair Recovery Radio this evening, and you're listening to Rick. I'm the host of the program, and tonight we have a very, very special treat. We've got with us Leslie Vernick, who actually I've just spoken with this past week for the first time, but she is someone that I have admired from afar. And her book, How to Act Right When Your Spouse Acts Wrong, has actually been probably one of the top three books we've recommended for the past 10 years. I don't know that it's actually been published for 10 years, but we've been using it. How long has it been around, Leslie?
It came out in 2002.
Okay, well, it hadn't been 10 years, but since it came out, we found it immediately, and we have probably we've bought it in bulk, handed it out, given it away. We have found it to be what we consider spot on theologically, and it has been a tremendous help for couples. And so we just wanted to have a chance, Leslie, to talk with you this evening. And Leslie has also come out with another book, The Emotionally Destructive Relationship, and I'd like to maybe toward the end of the program be able to even get into that a little bit. So do you mind if we jump into this thing, Leslie?
No, I don't mind at all.
Good. So how did this book come about?
The How to Act Right When Your Spouse Acts Wrong?
Absolutely. This first one, and we'll go to the second one during the second half of the program.
Sure. You know, in my counseling practice, I saw a lot of people who were in difficult situations in their marriage, and they would tell me, you know, I read Dobson's book, Tough Love, or I read somebody else's book on this, and I've tried this, and I've done that, and I've, you know, done tough love, soft love, all kinds of different things, and nothing works. And I thought, you know, there really isn't a book out there for someone who's tried to do everything they can to restore their marriage, and it's still not working. How do we give that person hope? Not necessarily hope that their marriage is going to be restored, although that's a wonderful thing to happen if it happens, but hope that God's still at work in the process, and that they can trust God even in the midst of a difficult situation.
Right, and I meant to mention, I'm so excited about you being here tonight, but I meant to mention, if anybody would like to call in and talk with Leslie, please feel free to call us at area code 512-637-9673. That's 637-9673, area code 512. Or you can also email me at radio@hope-now.com. That's radio@hope-now.com. So don't worry about interrupting our conversation, guys. If you have a question, please call in and ask Leslie. So I think, you know, we have found, especially with infidelity, and you would think that this would be kind of a strange thing, but we often look for the quick fix when faced with problems in our marriages. And why do people do that, Leslie?
Well, I think they want to get out of pain. Anybody wants to get out of pain. You know, when you're in pain, you look for the pain pill, and you just want to get out of pain as fast as possible. So, I mean, I certainly don't blame people for feeling that way, and certainly I understand that. But even a pain pill doesn't take away the problem. It may take away the pain for a season, but if you never address the problem, whether it's physical or the emotional or marital pain, it's just going to keep going. And so I really encourage people, especially if there's been an affair, other serious marital betrayal, that you realize that there isn't a quick fix. But if you do the hard work of a real fix, you can actually have a better marriage.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, one of the things we tell our couples is, you know, please don't expect this is going to happen overnight. In fact, we even tell people that, especially coming from infidelity, that perspective, that it may take as long as 18 to 24 months. But that's not that things are miserable that long. It's just that, you know, it's a long journey for healing. It really is. It's not something that'll happen overnight.
Well, and I think once innocent trust, I mean, everybody, when they first get married, you give someone your trust. They don't really earn it. You just give it to them because that's part of being in love and getting married. But when someone has betrayed that kind of innocent trust, you never can recapture that again. But you can build back trust. But that takes some time, and it's not given. It's earned. And that's a hard thing.
Yeah, I think it does take a long time for trust to begin to come back. So what do you see as some of the mental obstacles that kind of keep us from looking at maybe our own wrongs in our marriages?
Well, you know, Jesus tells us, you know, take the log out of your own eye before removing the speck in someone else's. And although from our perspective, at least when I was writing this book, I did not write it with the view of the big sins in mind only, you know, adultery, you know, terrible deceit, abuse. Certainly I cover those in the book, but I also encountered lots of couples who just had a hard time responding to the minor irritants of life, like a husband who left his dirty socks all over the, you know, floor in the bedroom chronically and never picked them up, or somebody who wasn't very communicative. And how do we respond right in those kind of situations? And so some of the reasons we don't respond right is we just think it's not fair. You know, why should we have to work hard when the other person isn't working as hard as we're working? And we get caught in this, you know, everything has to be 50-50 and equal in marriage, and if they're not working as hard as I am, well, then I'm not going to work either. But the consequences of that is a lose-lose for both of you.
Right. We always say that the second law of thermodynamics also applies to marriage, that you'll never get as much out of a marriage as you put into it. One of the things that is one of our things, Leslie, that we talk about is that my mate is never my problem. My mate just exposes the problem in me. And I know that you talk a lot about, in the second chapter, about how your spouse is wrong really kind of exposes things that we need to look at. How do you explain that in your book for people?
Well, let me just give you a real clear visual. When I'm working with couples in my office and I hear couples, you know, give the blame game, you know, well, it's your fault that I acted this way. And, you know, I pull out this jar I have in my office. It's a jar of water. And I, you know, it looks, from the surface, it looks like clear water. And so I say, you know, look at this jar of water. It's, you know, perfectly fine water. And then I shake it up. And what they don't realize is at the bottom of the jar, which I cover with my hand as I'm holding the jar, it's full of sediment. And so when I shake up the water, you know, it gets all dirty then. And I say, okay, who made this jar dirty? Did me shaking it make it dirty? Or was it dirty all along and the shaking it just exposed the dirt? You see, and Jesus tells us this very same thing when he says in Luke 6:45, he said, it's out of the overflow of your heart your mouth speaks. And so when we get shaken up in our marriage and stuff comes pouring out of our mouth, it really exposes our own heart. It exposes things that are going on with us, even the minor irritants of life. When we get impatient and we get, you know, irritable or we get ugly in our tongue, our spouse might have done some things wrong, but it didn't make us react that way. It just exposed the things that were already in our heart. Just like me shaking the jar of water didn't make it dirty. It was already dirty. It just made it obvious that it was dirty.
That's a great analogy, Leslie. And we have a caller, Andy. And Andy, do you have a question tonight?
Yes, I just actually called in the station to bring it up, and I didn't know your show was going to be on. But I was just trying to make sure that the PSA that kind of announced your show earlier in the afternoon, I think this one, if you ran the tapes, you would actually accidentally perhaps have heard yourself saying that a marriage that's had infidelity and they've worked it out is better than a marriage that's not had infidelity.
No, what I said was that you can build a better marriage than you had before you committed the infidelity, because obviously when a marriage has had infidelity, there's been some things wrong in the marriage to begin with. Often.
Right. Yeah, and I've heard your previous shows where I was getting ready for you to say that wrong thing, and then you said, you know, it was a marriage that would be better than people who just go on to the next partner and don't ever learn how to patch things up. But if you run the tape, it was confusing today, I think. But anyway, and because society's kind of playing around with that other message, I know they had one day at a time before I was a Christian, and I even told my parents, you ought to get a divorce, you'll have a nice apartment with two sexy daughters and a nice repairman, and it'll be a lot nicer than it is around here. But yet when my parents, well, like my cross-country coach said, you know, when you're running, don't try and pass somebody going downhill. In other words, you know, I would never want anybody to try and speed up the errors in their marriage by going out and having an affair, you know, so that they could be like one day at a time, because it blew our family up for all practical purposes. So
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't get better by speeding up your descent. I don't think.
Well, Andy, nobody would ever say that, and if that came across an announcement, that would be crazy. Having an affair to improve a marriage would be nuts.
Right, exactly. There
but
you go.
At the same time,
if you played that particular tape, because I've always heard you to understood you to say that, you know, people that stick it out and make it right or can have a better marriage than they did at the beginning, and everybody has to agree with that, you know. But just run today's tape. That was kind
okay,
of
Andy.
Because it was me and my daughter that thought it was a mistake.
Great. Thank you very much.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
If you could have the marriage you've always wanted, even after being cheated on, if you could avoid losing a huge chunk of your standard of living, why would you sentence yourself to an empty, lonely room? Divorce sucks. The emotional trauma and financial loss are much worse than what you think. And infidelity can be cured. It's not as hopeless as it seems. AffairRecovery.com. Almost 90% of the couples completing our program not only enjoy restored marriages, they report a much higher level of marital satisfaction. AffairRecovery.com. Don't give up before it gets better. Join the ranks of those who found new life. AffairRecovery.com. Where healing happens.
It's a dirty little secret. Infidelity can be cured. Betrayal doesn't have to end in divorce. In fact, the best marriages I know are those that have recovered from betrayal. Join us each Sunday evening from 9 to 10 o'clock at Affair Recovery Radio and experience God's greatest miracle, the miracle of redemption. Affair Recovery Radio, radio to the power of God on KLGO 99.3 and 98.5.
Welcome back to Affair Recovery Radio this evening, and we've got Leslie Vernick, one of the greatest authors, I think, here in America, just because of the incredible message that she gives about love and about, I think, realistically, how to look at marriages. And her book, How to Act Right When Your Spouse Acts Wrong, I cannot recommend it highly enough. So, Leslie, one of the things I wanted to ask you was, what guidelines would you suggest for determining whether or not to even work on a marriage after betrayal?
Well, you know, Rick, I think there's a couple of things to look at. One would be, you know, the overall pattern of deceit in the relationship, not just because of the affair. Obviously, there's been some deceit there, but has there been a longstanding pattern of deceit in lots of different areas so that trust is seriously breached, not just, I can't trust you that you're not going to be faithful to me, but I can't even trust that you're going to tell me the truth. You haven't told me the truth. You haven't told me the truth for a long time, not just about this, but a lot of other areas in our marriage. So then trying to rebuild trust with someone who has a chronic history of deceitfulness would be pretty tough. I think another area would be the partner's willingness to work on rebuilding trust. Oftentimes I'll work with a couple and, you know, the person who's committed adultery, let's just say if it's the man, he'll say, you know, well, I'm not about to jump through her hoops. Why should I have to do that? And there's an unwillingness to understand that how deeply he's hurt his partner and an unwillingness to do what it takes to rebuild that marital trust. And when someone's unwilling to do that, it's very difficult to restore that marriage in a healthy way.
So if you've got somebody maybe who's been unfaithful and they're not really willing, I think, to maybe help their mate respond or help them heal, not respond. What would a loving response begin to look like for the person that's been the betrayed spouse, the hurt spouse? I mean, how are they supposed to deal with someone who's not really taking responsibility or just not really seeming to care that much?
Well, I think here and I talk a lot about this in my other book, The Emotionally Destructive Relationship, but a healthy relationship, Rick, requires three ingredients in order for it to work. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't have ministry to somebody, and sometimes marriages are sometimes not a healthy relationship. You might just have ministry to your spouse. But a healthy relationship, if you're going to build a healthy marriage, requires three things. It requires mutual caring, mutual honesty, and mutual respect. And when those three ingredients are present, even after an affair, if you start working on those three ingredients, and build those mutually in the relationship, you can have a healthy, good marriage. If you have one person who has those three ingredients, but another who isn't willing to contribute to those three, you cannot have a healthy relationship. So what does the partner do whose partner's not willing to be honest or is not willing to be mutually caring or is not willing to be respectful and is not willing to work on those things? Well, they may decide they have to stay married for a number of different reasons, some of them very good reasons, children, economics, and they may choose to love their spouse in terms of a ministry, but let them not be confused that they're going to have a relationship with that person, because you can't have a healthy relationship with someone who's not honest with you, who doesn't care about you and doesn't respect you. But another loving response might be that you give your spouse the gift of consequences. You know, the Bible tells us what a man sows, he reaps. And so sometimes I've encountered situations where people are chronically misbehaving in lots of ways, whether they be abusive or adultering or deceitful, and they don't have to experience the consequences of it. The other spouse doesn't implement that gift, and so they kind of think they can get away with it because they still get the perks of married life by, you know, committing the sins. And so the gift of consequences is where you speak up and you say, you know, what you've done is so grievous to our marriage, I cannot continue to be in this relationship in a close way. I'm going to have to step back or separate for a season until you see what you've done and are willing to change and work on things. And that's a drastic step. But sometimes it's the step that's necessary to wake the spouse up and say, wow, she really means it or he really means it. I'm not going to get away with this anymore and still get the perks of married life.
So I'm taking it, you're saying that if someone isn't willing to do the kind of the three pieces, the mutuality pieces of that relationship, that maybe the gift of consequences is an alternative at that point. What if, on the other hand, maybe they are doing those three things? Well, maybe it's, I'm going to ask the other side. What if you've got an unfaithful spouse and they've made confession, they're really trying to be honest, they're trying to be, what were the three components
mutual,
again?
Mutual caring. Mutual honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And mutual respect.
Okay. And let's say they're doing those three things, but the hurt spouse isn't willing to be maybe caring or maybe just respectful in that situation.
Right, how does the throwing it back up in their face.
Absolutely. How does the unfaithful spouse then respond? What's a loving response to that?
Well, I think the first stage of that process would be, you know, I really understand how much I've hurt you. And so when you show empathy and care for the other person's pain, and you say, I am so sorry that I have hurt you and that it has caused you to become like this, that you haven't been an unforgiving or you haven't been a mean-spirited person before this. And so I am so sorry that what I have done in our marriage has affected you so deeply that this is how you're responding. I am so sorry for that. And is there anything I can do to help you build trust, or is there anything that I can help you do to let this go?
Right.
So it's showing concern and compassion for this person's place. Now, that may be something that they do for weeks or months for a while, but after a while, they still won't let it go. I think the next step would be to say, you know, I've done all I can do, all I know how to help you get over this. I've tried to be honest. I've tried to be faithful. I've confessed my sin. I've gone to counseling. And your continued anger and bitterness and unforgiveness toward me is ripping apart our marriage.
Right.
Yeah, and I think it's really helping the other spouse now to say, what is the reason that you need to hang on to this? What's going on with you?
Do you have a timeline that you kind of keep in your head where you go, man, this has really gone an awfully long time here?
Well, one of the things I pay attention to was how long was the timeline of the affair? Because, again, the longer the affair, sometimes the longer it is to get over it.
Right.
For the spouse. And so, you know, if they've been in a off and on, or an on relationship with a lover on the side for a year, 2 years, don't expect the spouse to get over this in 3 months.
Right. So give them enough time to be able to work through it.
Mm-hmm.
So don't expect something really quickly. I think that's one of the messages we give. At least grant them time, because, like I said, sometimes we've seen it takes a while. especially even depending on the amount of trauma that person may have already had in their background. If they didn't have a really safe place to begin with in their own childhood, you know, they may have their own struggles just being able to move beyond it.
Right. And recently I just sent out a newsletter on how to let go of toxic emotions, and I gave 5 steps, you know, that we have to acknowledge the truth of what happened to us. We, you know, we can't change something if we won't own it. And so I find a lot of Christian women and men sort of, instead of dealing with the pain and really, even the anger, even if they don't like it, they're embarrassed that they have such strong feelings. They feel ashamed that they hate their spouse, or, you know, they have these awful feelings. And so some people won't even acknowledge that that's how bad they feel, but it squirts out in these little side comments or, you know, it's passive-aggressive kind of stuff.
Right.
So you have to acknowledge the truth of what happened to you and the pain that you feel, and feel your painful feelings, because they do serve a purpose, and you need to get them out and grieve them and look at them. And if they continue to come up, though, after your spouse has been building trust and working on your relationship, then I have to tell the person to really listen to what they're telling themselves. You know, are they saying, you know, he never loved me, or he loved her more than me, or, you know, she doesn't find me attractive, or she's just playing me. Whatever your internal dialogue is, you've got to start to listen to the lies of that and to see if that's stirring up your own feelings all over again.
So at the risk of taking us down a bunny trail, what were the 5 steps you suggested?
Acknowledge the truth of what happened to you. Allow yourself to feel your painful feelings.
Okay.
Because they do serve a purpose. They're here to teach you something. And so I tell people to learn from them, but don't coddle them, especially when they're negative. Because the more we hold on to them, the more toxic they become. And then the 3rd step is to listen for your internal self-talk, because our emotions are always linked to our thoughts, and I talk a lot about that in the book. And it's often those thoughts that get us stuck in repeating our painful feelings. So we have to evaluate what's true and what's lies. In other words, when we say, you know, he never loved me, or our marriage is just a sham, if I keep repeating those things to myself and they're not true, of course I'm going to reap all those toxic feelings all up again.
Right.
The 4th thing is to choose, after you've worked through the feelings and your marriage is on a better place, choose to say goodbye to those painful emotions. Let them go. And then receive God's forgiveness, forgive yourself and others, because we're all imperfect, we're all sinful. And so the goal is learning to live in love and grace and not in anger, hurt, or resentment. And then when those feelings come back up, you have to say, you know what, I chose to let you go. You're not serving any more good purpose. In fact, the purpose that you're doing now is becoming destructive in my life and in my marriage.
Right. One of the things we tell people is God's sheep, you're always going to have 2 voices running around up in your head, because sheep only have 2 voices, the voice of the shepherd and the voice of the butcher. And you need to be very careful to learn which voice you're listening to, because both of those voices will be running at the same time.
That's right. That's right. And so, you know, Jesus tells us, my sheep know my voice. And so
right.
We'll be learning to listen to the non-condemning voice of the Savior.
Absolutely. You said in your book, one of the things I really liked in the How to Act Right book is stop reacting and start responding. How do you suggest people learn how to do that, Leslie?
Well, I think the very first step is they have to make 2 promises to themselves. Usually people are guilty in 1 of 2 ways if they're a reactor. One is they don't harness their tongue. You know, they sort of just blurt out whatever they're feeling without a whole lot of thought or prayer. And there's a way to talk about something difficult with someone, but it's not to just vomit out those emotions at their greatest intensity, because that often causes more damage. So learning to tame your tongue. And the 2nd thing is stop pretending everything is well, because a lot of times people react just by shutting down and withdrawing, and they sort of just placate or please, or they, you know, withdraw, but they don't really deal with the problem. And so that's the first thing that you just begin to do, so that you don't continue to damage things. You don't blow up, and you don't pretend. The 2nd thing that's really important is that you need to understand that if you're going to respond rightly, you need to understand how to fight the way God wants you to fight for your marriage. And by doing that, we need to understand who our real enemy is, because in those moments when you're reacting, your spouse is your enemy. But when we learn to respond, we realize that our spouse is not our enemy. It's Satan who wants to use us to hurt our spouse, and he's already used our spouse to hurt us.
Yes, exactly.
And so we need to understand that we're in a much bigger battle here. It's not just this battle between me and this person, but Satan's going to use the situation to destroy us and our family and our children.
So how do you think God views maybe our marriage and our responses to our spouses?
Well, I think God uses marriage. you know, I don't know how many children you have. I have two grown children. I've been married 32 years now. And marriage and parenting is about the hardest thing I have ever done in my entire life.
Amen. Preacher, I've been married 30 years, and I've got three grown kids, two married, four grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand.
Yeah, because God is passionate about relationships.
Absolutely.
And the thing that happens in relationships is we get to practice the very things that God says are important. Because he teaches us those things in his word, like, you know, how he says, you know, forgive one another as Jesus has forgiven you. But how do we do that? And how do we learn to do that, but in the context of relationships? And it's usually those really close relationships in our household where we practice it the most, because other people we can just walk away from if they aggravate us. But our children, our spouse, you know, we're commanded to make a lifetime commitment to these people. And so when we're hurt or disappointed or aggravated, we have to learn what it means to learn to forbear with one another, to learn to let love cover a multitude of sins, to learn how to speak the truth in love, to learn how to overcome evil with good, you know, to learn all those things, to love an enemy sometimes, and what does that look like biblically? And those things aren't learned in a textbook. They're learned in the daily grind of living.
You bet. Trying to handle that crucible of marriage and life. I think we've got a caller. Kathy is calling in from Oregon. And Kathy, did you have a question for Leslie this evening?
I do have a question for Leslie. Turn that down, please. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, Kathy.
Hey, my question to you is this. When you said earlier in the show that you have to kind of look at your marriage, take the log out of your own eye, right? And I've had a real struggle with this because my husband's infidelity started at the beginning of my marriage, and so I can't go back and find a time in my marriage where I can remove that log. So how do I deal with that?
Well, when I say take a log out of your own eye, what I don't mean that you caused your husband's infidelity by any stretch of the imagination, Kathy. Your husband had lots of choices in dealing with his own stuff, and infidelity was not a good one in any kind of situation. No matter how unhappily married someone is, infidelity is never a good or right choice. However, when I say take the log out of your own eye, what I mean by that is, you know, say to God, you know, I need to have this really hard conversation with my spouse. They've done some really awful things, and I need to confront them, or I need to talk to them, or I need to implement the gift of consequence. I need to do that for their welfare. But God, help me to do it in a spirit of humility, knowing that I'm not better than this person, that I, too, am a sinner, that I, too, struggle with temptation, maybe not in those areas, but other areas. And so when I speak hard words like, you have to move out, or we can't be married right now, we have to be separated because of all the infidelity that you've done and you're not repentant of it, whatever hard words you need to say, if you do it with a spirit of humility, that you've searched your heart, you know that you're before God as best you can, you're doing this not to punish your spouse. You're doing this to love them well. That's what I mean by taking the log out of your own eye.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes, it does make sense. But if I, when I started or when I went back into my marriage, I had done that basically. I had said, okay, Lord, I'm a sinner too. I've not been perfect in my life. And so I need to show this man grace, even though he has done this to me. And then through the past year, a little over a year, things keep coming out and coming out and coming out and coming out. And even up until this last week, things still come out. And so after a while, I kind of go, I try to find a place where I can go, okay, I need to really work on this part because this is maybe where I could have done something different in my marriage. But then I find out that the infidelity started so fast after the vows were said, like, I just can't. I can't find a place, and so it keeps taking me to the past. I can't view the future because I keep going to the past, trying to clean the past up in my head.
But I think what I'm hearing you say, Kathy, though, is your husband has not been totally honest with you yet.
Right.
And so you keep getting dribs and drabs of what happened, and so it's very hard for you to really figure out the truth. And so it's hard to go forward and heal yet because it's still being uncovered. And I think that one of the things that, you know, you have to understand is that, you know, if your husband isn't really willing to come clean, Rick had asked me, you know, what are the guidelines of whether someone can work on the marriage after betrayal? And I think one of the most important guidelines is a full confession and a willingness on the part of the adulterer to look at why did this happen? Not because my spouse didn't do something or I was unhappy, but why did I make that choice? Why did I choose to betray my spouse? I could have talked to her. I could have gone to her and said, I'm not happy. I could have made lots of different choices. Why did I make this choice so soon after I got married? What's going on in me that I have to look at? Because if I don't look at that, I'm likely to repeat it again and again.
You know, I can honestly say he's been doing a good job of looking at that stuff. And but every time something new comes out, and I'll say, why didn't you tell me that? And I get, well, I just remembered it, or I remembered it 2 months ago, but I didn't want to tell you because I thought I told you everything in generalities. I didn't, you know, I didn't realize I had to tell you specifics like that. And it just keeps taking me back to the past. Like, I have to keep closing all these doors to my past. And I go, gosh, I'm never going to get through this. But yet, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to end my marriage. Right. I don't want to, I mean, I love my husband. Sure. But on the backside of that, I feel like I could end my own, who I am. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do. Unfortunately, sadly, there are many people in your situation.
Man, I can't hear you, Leslie, so I'm sorry.
Yes, I do understand what you're saying, and I guess I'm going to ask you, have you been working alone? Are you working with a pastor or a counselor?
Yes, I'm working with my pastor. I'm actually working with Rick.
Okay.
My husband and I are working with Rick as well.
Uh-huh.
But I'm just having such a hard time getting over this hurdle, and when I get the new stuff coming in, it just makes the anger well back up inside of me so deep. And I've talked to Rick about this. I mean, I had this what I call soul anger because it's gone straight into my soul, which is something I've never dealt with before.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know. I mean, I want to feel safe with my husband. I do. I really do. But then I'm afraid to because, like last weekend, I heard more stuff, and then I go, I don't want to keep putting myself in a place that I'm going to just get hurt. So if I get close to you again, if I allow you to hold me again, next weekend you can hurt me all over again. It's gotten really tough.
Well, Kathy, obviously there's way too much here for me to unpack, you know, just in a couple seconds to talk with you, but here's two things that I would suggest that you do. One is that there are never any guarantees that you don't get hurt in a relationship. So if you're hoping to somehow build your marriage so that you're sure that when you get close to your husband again, he'll never hurt you again, that's pretty impossible for even good marriages because people hurt each other. They sometimes don't mean to. Sometimes they just do.
Right,
so
I get that.
The person you need to trust right now is not so much your husband, but you need to trust God. That if God is working in your husband's life and he's working in your life and he's working to restore this marriage, then you trust God with that process. That doesn't mean you close your eyes to your husband's sin. It just means you trust God with that process, that even if your husband stumbles or tells you something new that he didn't remember before or whatever he does, that God is going to use that in your life and his for good.
And Kathy, I want to thank you for calling tonight.
Thanks, Rick.
But I think that's a great question because that leads me, it's a good segue to the thing, Leslie, here as to why is it so important to work through marital difficulties, I mean, instead of ignoring them? I mean, what's your opinion on that?
Well, I think, you know, I mean, certainly God calls us to forbear. And so there's times when we do just let things go, that it's not important to bring up every little thing. And if someone in a marriage brings up every little thing that bothers them with every little instant, it's going to be a very difficult marriage for both people. So I think there's times that you do let some of the minor things go. But I think some of these bigger moral issues or hurts that go on in a marriage, if you don't talk about them and you don't resolve them, first of all, the person doesn't really get to know you and what makes you tick and what's important to you and what you value and what hurts you. And so it's likely if they don't know that they actually could do it again and they don't even mean to. If you don't say ouch when someone steps on your toe, they may not even realize they're stepping on your toe. And so I think it's important to talk about things that bother you for that reason. But second of all, this relationship is a long-term relationship. God calls marriage a lifetime commitment. And so you want to keep a clean slate as quick as possible and as much as possible, because the more junk that you allow to accumulate between the two of you, the more it builds walls, and that will affect intimacy, physical intimacy and emotional intimacy. And then pretty soon you feel like you're living with a stranger, or there's no intimacy emotionally or physically, and oftentimes that's one of the reasons where someone gets more tempted to find someone outside the marriage.
You know, one of the things that you talked about, Leslie, in your book, and I think it's been a great thing for me, and I've really enjoyed it, is how you know, basically that love will always act in the best interest of another person. And I just think that is so in line with the teachings of Jesus, that, you know, our goal is to love. But love doesn't mean necessarily being a doormat, and love doesn't necessarily mean just putting up with things or pretending, as you've been saying, that love really does have a genuine concern for the other person and is willing to do what will help the other person. And what a great message in that book. So,
in the long-term best interest, too, because
right,
it might be that you say, like, I have a couple right now that I'm working with, and there's been some serious marital betrayal. And, you know, he could defend, it's in the best interest of our marriage right now that I stay in the house because our children are small, blah, 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 you know. But in his long-term best interest, that's not best for their marriage because he continues to act the same way he's always acted. And so for their long-term best interest, it's best for him to have to suffer the consequences of his behavior right now so that he learns that it's not acceptable, it's not appropriate, it's not tolerated in this marriage for him to behave like he did.
Right, that's exactly right. Which brings us to your second book, and I'd like you to tell me a little bit about that book, if you don't mind. I know our listeners would like to hear about it.
Well, I talk about the emotionally destructive relationship because so often in the church, we don't really talk about emotional abuse in a biblical way. We don't even define it. We say, well, you know, it's just words, nobody hit you, you know, get over it. And yet God's Word tells us that words are very powerful, and they have the power of life and death. And so I think it's really important that we understand biblically what it means to have a healthy relationship and what a destructive relationship looks like. Because we can have destructive relationships with all kinds of people, not just in a marriage. We can have it in a friendship, in a parent-child, in a work relationship. And so often it becomes so wounding, it's soul-destroying to our very being.
Right.
So I try to give people biblical understanding of what it is and how to deal with it and how to make changes in it, and if not, then how to heal from it.
So what is an emotionally healthy relationship from a biblical perspective, Leslie?
An emotionally healthy relationship is a mutual relationship in which there's mutual caring, mutual respect, and mutual honesty. Again, Jesus calls us to have ministry and to even love our enemies, but he doesn't say we're to have a relationship with them. In order to have a relationship with someone, there has to be a mutual caring and a mutual honesty and a mutual respect. And when one of those things break down, it becomes a difficult relationship. If it breaks down a lot, it can become a destructive relationship.
So,
a destructive relationship is something where there's a pattern of this kind of behavior that's going on over and over in the relationship, where there's no repentance or no awareness, no change.
So like in Luke 17, where Jesus says, if your brother sins, repent, rebuke him. If he repents, forgive him. If he does it seven times in a day and seven times repents, you know, forgive him. That's one thing. But if someone does it and doesn't have that kind of brokenness about what they're doing to their mate, then at that point, there's something dangerous about that relationship.
Absolutely, absolutely, because it becomes dangerous, it destroys the relationship, but sometimes it even destroys the person. It can, you know, sometimes a person's words or the ways they treat another person, I talk about five ways that a relationship becomes destructive emotionally. Abusive, obviously emotional abuse, but also chronic deceit, chronic indifference, especially in a marital relationship where one spouse just doesn't care about the feelings, the thoughts, the needs of the other. No matter what you say, no matter what you do, they just don't really care. That causes a great deal of distress and pain to the other person, and that's an emotionally destructive relationship.
So deceit and indifference?
Deceit, indifference, abuse.
Okay.
And then the other two kinds are when someone's controlling, overly controlling, overbearing, and they may not use emotional abuse. They may use scripture and the authority, whether it's a pastoral congregation kind of relationship or an employee-employer relationship or a spousal relationship where there's a micromanaging of the other person's time and they don't get choices like an adult person should have.
Right.
That becomes very destructive to them. And then the last kind is where someone is very dependent. We've all been in relationships where someone kind of expects us to completely fill their emotional tank, and they become very draining. And that relationship becomes destructive because pretty soon, if you don't set boundaries, you distance yourself from that person, and you get worn out by them, and that relationship can become, you know, destructive to both of you.
So then that that dependence, that's an interesting one. I hadn't thought about that one, so I like that. Because I think it's very true that it's again, there's not a mutuality if one person's always having to hold the other person up and meet their needs all the time. So I would certainly agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone is in one of those things where there's the deception or the indifference, the controlling, the overbearing, that dependence, what types of responses do you begin to recommend in the book? And I mean, how do you go about addressing those things?
Well, the key that gets people unstuck is that they need to understand that change always begins with us. You know, when we're in a destructive relationship with someone, and I tell the story in my book about my relationship with my mother. So it's not just a marital destructive relationship, but my mother was destructive to me as a child, but even as an adult, I did not know how to interact with her. And I've met so many people who have a destructive relationship with their adult parent. And, you know, being a trained therapist, being a Christian, she still often got the best of me. And so it became very, very destructive. And so when I kept trying to change her, it didn't work.
Right.
But I began to realize, you know what, the only person that can change this pattern in the relationship is me. And I needed to start by deciding that I was no longer going to participate in this destructive dance with her. And I needed to do whatever it would take to get myself healthy so that I would respond differently. Because once I responded differently, she couldn't respond the same way anymore.
Right. I've always loved that concept that marriage is changed unilaterally, not bilaterally. It takes two people doing the same thing to keep it the same. One person changes, and something has to give at that point. And I think that's true in any type of relationship. So,
well, I liken it, Rick, to a dance. Now, we're all into, you know, Christians used to not talk about dancing, but now that we're all watching Dancing with the Stars, we sort of get it. And, you know, when you're dancing with someone in a, you know, in a relationship, it's a pretty intimate relationship, and you're dancing with them. And if you're dancing this dance, even if you don't like the dance, you're dancing it for years, and this person's, you know, stepping on your toes and knocking your knees and, you know, doing something you don't like, and you're dancing the same way with them all the time, the way you change that is you have to change your dance steps. And as soon as you change your dance steps, the dance changes. You can't dance the same way if you're changing your steps.
So I wonder if some people, as they begin to kind of maybe change the dance with someone, and if they've been in one of these relationships, if they might begin to feel guilt because they'll think that maybe they're not being loving by maybe setting those boundaries. I mean, how do you explain to someone that maybe they're, again, acting in the best interest of the other person by doing this?
Well, this is the three steps I give people in the book. I say that the very first thing that you need to know is being nice isn't always the answer. In fact, it sometimes contributes to the problem. And you need to learn to speak up. And if that doesn't work, you need to learn to stand up. And when that doesn't work, you need to learn to step back. Let me give you a scriptural injunction for this. In Matthew 18, Jesus says, if your brother sins against you, go to him. That's the speak up. And talk to him. And if he repents, you have won your brother. But if he does not listen, you're to up the ante. You're to take someone along with you. That's standing up and saying, you know, this is serious now. And if he will not listen, so here you've spoken up, you stood up, then treat him as you would a pagan or a tax collector. And so what Jesus is saying is that when you're in a relationship with someone and they're sinning against you and you've gone to them and you've talked to them and they will not hear you and you've gone to them with a stronger boundary or a stronger authority and they still will not listen, then your relationship with that person changes. It's not intimate anymore. It's not close anymore. It can't be. And so I give very specific ways to set those boundaries in that relationship so that Jesus doesn't say to hate pagans or tax collectors or not have anything to do with them. He doesn't say that. But Jews intuitively knew that they didn't have close fellowship with pagans and tax collectors.
Right.
So when you're in a destructive relationship with someone and you start changing the dance and you speak up and you stand up and say, you know, what you're doing is so destructive right now, I cannot act as if this doesn't matter. You have to stop this right now. And they won't. Then the boundary you set is, I will not allow myself to be treated like this anymore. Not you can't treat me this way anymore, because people can say, well, you want to bet? I'll do what I want to do.
Right.
But I won't let myself be talked to this way anymore, and to step back and leave the room or leave the house for an hour if you need to, and all different levels of that depending on the situation.
So if someone feels like, Leslie, they've maybe confronted or talked to their mate and said, you know, it's not okay what you're doing, and they spoke up, and how would you suggest that maybe they approach someone to help them, or who would they approach to go with them to talk to this person?
Well, I've had people approach their pastor, and in fact, you know, I've often been an advocate for people, I'm sure you have too, with their pastors with these kind of situations, because I think a lot of times, you know, pastors aren't quite sure biblically what to do when someone's ready to draw a line in the sand, you know, because they certainly want to honor the sanctity of marriage as I do. And sometimes in these abusive, adultery, serious addictions, those kind of biggies,
right?
There does need to be some other support and some intervention. And people have often asked me to go to their pastor and advocate with them. People have actually bought a couple books and given it to their pastor saying, look, here is a biblical response to these things. This is what God calls us to do when someone is sinning against us. This is what I need you to help me do with my husband. I need you to come with me and confront him. And planning to have a difficult discussion with someone. On my website, I've got all kinds of free helps. I don't know if you got a chance to go there, but people can take a test on the emotionally destructive relationship to see if they're in one. And also there's a how to have a difficult conversation with somebody in a good way, how to pray for that, how to plan and prepare so that the words that you say have the best chance of being heard. Because if you just blurted out, you might not be heard.
Right. So why don't you give people how to get a hold of your website? Because I'm sure there are many of our listeners. I've looked at it, and it's a great website. So would you mind giving the information on it?
Yeah, it's just www.leslievernick.com.
And
right on the homepage, there's all kinds of little helps that they can pick out whatever they want.
Yeah, I would, again, if you're listening to us tonight, certainly I highly recommend Leslie's books as well as her website, because she really brings just a common sense approach, but it's also incredibly biblical. I mean, I think it's one of the most balanced approaches I've found out there, so I can't recommend her stuff enough. So it's very, very good. So go to www.leslievernick.com. What else, Leslie? I know this is just kind of a really general question about the emotionally destructive relationship. Is there one last thing you'd want to say about that particular book, just for people to kind of – I don't even know what question I'm asking here, Leslie. It's late on a Sunday night here. But because I know this whole thing with the emotionally destructive relationship has got to be a question for almost all of our listeners that are dealing with infidelity, because, I mean, a lot of times you don't have – both partners trying to kind of partner together in healing. One person's going to be more invested than the other one. One person may still be mean. There may just be – and the hurt may make it kind of destructive on the front end of a relationship. How long does something need to go on? I'm just thinking of an instance maybe where a person finds out about a betrayal, they're extremely angry, and maybe they are being an abusive person at that point, but they traditionally have not been. How do you suggest someone deals in that sort of situation?
Well, I think that's where some discernment comes in, and even taking the test online, because it'll tell you how to discern whether it's, you know, a one-time kind of incident, because we're all sinners, and you don't have any relationship that's got no hurt to it. And so, you know, you can't expect to ever have a perfect relationship. And so how do you know whether it's just, you know, a hard relationship for a season because sin has occurred, or how do you know whether this is a destructive relationship? And it's not determined by one single incident of infidelity or abuse or even abuse, but rather patterns of repetitive actions or attitudes that result in tearing someone down or inhibiting someone's growth. And so when we look at those things, you know, even infidelity, that's a sinful thing and certainly a very destructive thing to a marriage, but it may not be a destructive relationship. If someone's repentant, if someone's willing to work on it, if someone's willing to be honest and accountable, then those sinful behaviors can be turned around and God can use that for that person's growth and for the marriage's growth as well. But when someone won't own anything, won't take responsibility for it, won't look at it, isn't willing to, you know, do a moral inventory, make amends, all the things that a healthy person does when they realize they've hurt someone, then it becomes a destructive relationship.
That's a great point. And we're about to wind up here. I'll tell you, we're going to put, Leslie, a link on our website when we put this recording up for anybody out there that would like to get there. We're going to make sure that her link is very visible for people because we'd really like you guys to listen to Leslie, buy her products, but mostly just because she's got a great thing to say, and I really think you ought to take advantage of what God has been teaching her, and the way she delivers it, I think, is very, very palatable. And there's a lot of wisdom, Leslie, in what you say. Anything you want to say in closing here?
Yeah, I just want to encourage your listeners that, you know, in spite of whatever difficulties they're going through, you know, God wants us to grow, to be healthy, to be whole, to be holy. All of that is, you know, kind of the same word usage in the scriptures. And so it's really important that no matter what you're going through, that you realize that Satan will take it and use it for your demise. But God promises that whatever you go through, adultery, abuse, affairs, all kinds of stuff, that he promises that he will use that. He doesn't allow Satan to get the upper hand unless we allow it, and that he will use it for our good if we will let him. And so we need to understand that healthy people always live in reality. And that means we let go of those unrealistic expectations we have of life and of people, and that life is supposed to be always perfect and marriage is supposed to be like, you know, Hollywood movies show it to be, and realize that life is hard. And Jesus says, in this world you will have many tribulations, and understand that relationships are hard, but that we can become whole and holy and healthy through them if we can submit all of those difficulties to God and work through them. And so let go of those unrealistic expectations. Let go of the lies that keep you trapped in those negative feelings so that you can become all that God wants you to be in the midst of a difficult situation.
Thank you, Leslie. And one last thing I want to say for you guys listening. Leslie has a wonderful blog. It's leslievernick.blogspot.com. And she does something that's amazing. She will answer questions. So it's a really good piece. I love her blog. And it's well done, Leslie.
Thank you. Yeah, readers can send them to my website, and then I'll put one a week on there. I have to put one in tomorrow. So if they put one on tonight, I might do it tomorrow. Although I'm going to be talking about sex tomorrow, so week after that. How do you have sex with someone you can't stand in your marriage?
That's a good one.
It is. It's a good question.
All right. Well, guys, we just thank you for joining us tonight. Leslie, thank you very much for being a part of the program. We just wish all of you Godspeed and his best, and just keep trying to walk with our Lord.
Thank you for joining us tonight and being a part of the newest addition to our services, Affair Recovery Radio, radio through the power of God. We'd like to invite you to go to our website, affairrecovery.com, and register for our free newsletter, as well as taking advantage of our free podcast. You will find that these resources are invaluable if you're trying to recover from some form of betrayal. We are here to help. We can also be contacted at 888-5-ARC-EMS. That's 888-5-ARC-EMS. And remember, there's nothing the nearness of God cannot heal.
Good night. God bless.
Then the word of the Lord came to Jeremiah, "I am the Lord, the God of all mankind. Is anything too hard for me?"